Well, and it is just about 12:30 here in beautiful Port Townsend, and I'm Taylor Clark, and I got a little theme music today. It's time for Bureaucracy Now. Port Townsend City Manager John Morrow is on vacation. I'm his co-host, Taylor, and I'm sitting in. And we have with us today City of Port Townsend Library Manager, Melody Sky Weaver. Hi, Melody.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here today, Taylor. Happy to guest host. Yeah. And I'm the library director.
Just library director. Okay. Did I say library manager? Okay. and we have Port Townsend Police Chief Thomas Olson with us, live from his office, it looks like.
And, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So this is the program John's put together for us. And I was struggling a little bit to understand what we were going to address for commonality. But I've seen a really good synopsis from Melody on what we're going to talk about. Do you want to introduce that, Melody?
Yes. Well, I'm thrilled to be able to speak with Chief Olson and you today, Taylor, about all the wonderful ways we're thinking about how our librarian and our incredible police department can work together to help create more community, to build strong relationships between our city departments, and create more open access in our city to our government. Some of the really fun things that libraries across the country have been doing the last few years are programs like Coffee with a Cop, Cones with a Cop, that's ice cream. And our library.
I knew that was going to happen. Melody, your screen image has frozen and now the audio has dropped out. So let's see. Oh, she's back. We got you now. Nope, we don't.
Are you guys still there? I'm so sorry. It looks like I got disconnected for a minute.
Well, your screen image is frozen. You did get disconnected for a moment, but we can hear you now.
Okay. So sorry I lost you. I just made you host, Taylor, in case connectivity issues happen. I'm in a meeting room in the Seattle Public Library.
Oh,
I'm at the public library.
So you're on a shared Wi-Fi. There she goes again.
Yeah, it sounds like that is a yes.
I think we may be turning it over. There, no, we got you again. Okay, you know, libraries are so important. People depend on the connectivity of, you know, it's shared Wi-Fi, but it's usually pretty first class Wi-Fi. Melody, you want to try one more time? No. All right. Well, we're going to struggle through this. She got us up to cops with cones. Have you been, Tom, have you been sharing ice cream at the library?
Not yet, but sounds like something that would be fun. You know, one of the things that I hope to do more of is more engagement with our younger citizens, our middle schoolers and our high schoolers. I do a lot of it now just because I've got kids in school and I attend all their events and so they see me a lot around the schools, but I'd like to do more engagement away from the schools as well.
That's actually part of the positive experience of being in a small town is you know that you see officers at community events. You often see them in uniform at community events, and they can, you know, they're your friends and neighbors. And I think that's, you know, that's certainly something that I can imagine the police department strives for. So it's interesting. I didn't realize you had school age kids, but it makes sense that you would show up there and be available.
I've got one in middle school and one in high school, and I make an effort to go in uniform so people see me there in uniform, and whether it's football games, basketball games at either school. Whenever I can, showing up in uniform, it's important to me. So,
we're still, I think, struggling with connectivity here.
Yeah. So, as for the library, you know, things Melody and I've been talking about it, teaming up and using their space and coming in there and engaging with our community at different levels, from whether it's coffee with a cop or cones with a cop with our younger kids. But myself and Chief Black, the fire chief,
oh right,
have
yes,
talked about doing a coffee with the chief, with both of us there and present, and talking about what they do and how they're involved in our city, and the fact that they're contracted to do city work. And it would be a great place to do it, at the library, actually right across the street from one of our
our really beautiful fire station there. Right.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. And I think it plays to the idea that libraries perform an important function in the community, that beyond just a library, but almost as a meeting place and as a community center. Not that we don't have community centers. We have the Jefferson, but that's a Jefferson County facility. But it makes sense to do that there. So what is this? I see Touch a Truck. Is that another planned event? Are you familiar with that one? That's on Melody's list.
I am not familiar with that one.
I'm thinking that may be more of a fire truck thing.
That very well could be.
Okay.
So yeah, I think Melody's going to have to.
She's going to have to fill on that.
Elaborate on that.
She also said, with officers and police dogs. Does Port Townsend have police dogs?
We do not right now.
County, I assume, does.
Jefferson County does not have a canine either right now. I think the nearest canine we have would be Squim PD.
Mm-hmm.
So,
hi, Taylor and Tom. I called in. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Yes.
Yep,
okay.
Oh my goodness. My apologies. I'm coming to you all from the Seattle Public Library, and they're having some technology issues with the wireless. So thank you for carrying on the show while I got back on.
We've been struggling through. This is actually a good time to remind listeners that we are using a different Zoom. While John is out of town, we have a different Zoom. And if you looked at the KPTZ website this morning, you would have seen the wrong Zoom. So if you're a listener and you're expecting to join us on Zoom, I'm terribly sorry. But please, if you have any questions about the library or about the police department, this is a great time to email them in to dj@kptz.org, and I will keep an eye on that if we get any, and I will read them out. Okay, Melody, are you still with us?
Yes, I am. Thanks so much,
okay.
Taylor.
Well, we've done an adequate job without you, but you had some idea of some things you wanted to talk about. Do you want to talk about that now?
Yes. So what I was talking about when I got disrupted by the technology.
Right. We got down to the cones.
We were talking about cones with a cop and coffee with a cop. So this is a way to utilize the trusted space of the library to build community. And I love the idea of having some of our wonderful officers and our police chief come to the library and to be able to share coffee with someone or an ice cream cone and get to have relationships built through discussions happening at the library in a nice informal setting. And some of the programs we've done in the past, we used to have a video tournament with some of our police officers and some kids with Mario Kart. It was great. I have to say, Tom, some of the officers didn't win. The kids usually beat them, but they were very gracious losers. But it was just a really fun way for people to get to know our officers in a way that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think of in the trusted space of the library. So I'm excited to work with Chief Olson to offer some more programs like this coming up this year.
Well, I think this is so important, the idea of getting to know our police officers as members of the community and trying to de-escalate this idea that there's an adversarial relationship between the police and the policed. It sounds like Thomas is working with you to try and address that. So good on you both.
Yes, thank you so much. And I think it too, what is really key to this is it's the beauty of like sharing a meal together or coffee when you realize one another's humanity. I have the privilege of being a city employee, and I have to say that the Port Townsend police officers are the finest officers I've ever worked with. And something that I'll have Tom speak more about is the idea of what community policing means, which he talks about it so eloquently. And the other thing I wanted Tom to talk about today is some of his hiring philosophies, because I think he's doing such an incredible job of transforming our police department to be even more responsive to what this beautiful vision of community policing is all about.
There were two topics there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I can touch a little bit on the community policing aspect. I get an opportunity to talk about it quite a bit when I meet with community groups and members. But, you know, every program within our department that I look at developing or bringing back, I want it to have some sort of community policing base around it. One of the projects that we're working on right now that I just was able to get some funding for in our last budget was a bike team.
Oh, wow.
So we are in the process of we're going to buy some new police bikes, and we're going to get some of our officers on bikes in at least start out with in the downtown area on the weekends and during our major events. One of the big things in community policing is getting your officers out of that car, mm-hmm. And out and engaging with the community. Mm-hmm. What a better way to get to know them than to have a conversation with them. And you can't do that if they're rolling by or, you know, parked in a parking lot.
This is an accessibility
or whatever. So
if somebody's on a bike, you can talk to them and say, hey, look over here. Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, my last department, we had bike teams that were out on the University of Washington campus quite often. And it played an important role. And so we are in the process of rebuilding our bike team and hope to have it up and running by May, hopefully.
That's exciting. Just in time for National Bike Month.
yep. Roadie Fest. And we're looking at working with a couple of local vendors and having a bike rodeo for our kids. And so, yeah, we're going to use it as just another tool to get us out there and engaging.
So I just have to ask, you mentioned police bicycles. Is there like an interceptor model of I mean, I'm trying to picture what that is.
Well, I'll say that we are looking at the 28 mile an hour
electric bike.
Bikes from one of our local vendors right here in Port Townsend. You know, they're not cheap, but you know,
they would have a wide application in a 25 mile an hour town to have a
yeah. And so, you know, something we have to think about too, if we have an officer out of their car and on a bike, unlike a campus where you can get just about anywhere in, you know, 3 or 4 minutes, we may still need to respond to a call, and so we need to do that in a timely manner.
Right.
So we don't want to, you know, handicap ourselves, if you will, and put ourselves on something that we can't get to a call in a timely manner if we're a distance away from our car. So we want to have something that we can actually respond to.
Now, how are you going to pick, the officers who are then part of the bike patrol? Will that be rotated? Will there be specialists? Are they chomping at the bit?
Well, you know, some certainly are. Some already have experience. Some already have training. You know, we're going to look at naturally a volunteer basis first, mm-hmm. and then it may be, or part of it will be, you know, what shift you're working. If you're working straight night shift,
right.
Not a good time
to be biking.
Can't really have you on the bike team because, you know, bikes are primarily for daylight hours. And so that's when we're going to want to have them out there is during the daytime, the day shift. And, you know, our officers are pretty locked into their schedules. So that'll somewhat give us an idea of who's going to be a part of our bike team. But
okay. What else in the area of community policing are you looking at?
Well, I'm working on hopefully coming this summer, a chief's advisory board. I don't want to use the wrong word and make it more detailed than it is, but basically members of the community that will meet with me on a regular basis to talk about anything from the police department, from policy or anything that would directly impact the community. And we're going to reach out to our community and hear from them on these things and not try to build some of this policy in a vacuum, but having community feedback.
So much like we have a park advisory board, we would have a police. I'm going to just put quotes around. It's radio, so nobody can see me doing air quotes, yeah. But advisory board. But yeah, that. You'll be reaching out to the community for volunteers to join that that group and meet with you on a regular basis.
Yeah, and also, you know, anything that are concerns of them or within their communities, they can bring to us as well. And, you know, something that I've talked about since I got here is sectorizing the city and putting specific officers assigned to or responsible for certain communities and neighborhoods, and that those communities will have direct access, or they'll know exactly who their officer is that's responsible for their neighborhoods.
Okay, so not that they would only patrol that neighborhood, but for as a single point of contact, if you lived in one area, you would know who your designated officer was for guiding you through something.
Correct, and they'll be responsible for holding community meetings within those neighborhoods and talking to them specifically about issues that are impacting their neighborhood. And those officers will also be well aware of the incidents that occur specifically in their sector. So a lot of times they're related, and if they're investigated by two completely different officers, we may never put two and two together on that. So there'll be a conduit for bringing all the issues and challenges and calls for service within a community together to try to help solve those things a little bit quicker. And then the idea
that's
is
really
to,
exciting.
The
idea is to have everybody in those communities know their officer by their first name. And you know, those officers, when they have proactive time, will go up into their assigned sectors and get out of the car and walk around and touch bases with those community members.
Right.
So I still got a few staffing things that I need to get in place before we can actually do that, but it's certainly on the horizon.
Well, let me move on to staffing in just a moment. I just wanted to ask you one follow-up question on the advisory role. If somebody was interested in joining that, I'm assuming you haven't gotten this going yet, but what would they keep an eye on to find out when that opportunity was available?
Well, I've already had a couple community members reach out to me, and so I'm not starting yet, but if someone is interested and they want to reach out and have a conversation with me and talk about that,
absolutely. You an email. Okay, good.
That's great.
Let's talk about staffing. This is always... I guess I'm going to just first ask, you know, how many police officers do we currently have and in Port Townsend, and how many do we have an allocation for? So I'm assuming you have that you perhaps have an open position, and you're what do the numbers look like on that?
So real quick, I'll break it down for you. We have now allocation for 16 FTEs. That's full-time positions. The newest one, the 16th position, is my deputy chief position that I've got an advertisement out for as we speak. So we got that approved in the budget to bring a deputy chief on. That person will oversee operations, all patrol and investigation side of the house. So I can focus on moving the department forward when it comes to strategic planning and upcoming accreditation. So, and of course, my community engagement piece, it's, you know, the community expects me to be out there and be available.
Right.
And if I'm focusing on daily operations, it's really hard to do that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So we've got the deputy chief position. We have 15 sergeants. Well, I take that back. Myself is a position. So we have 14 sergeant and officer positions. And currently we are 3 FTEs down. The challenging thing is we have 2 in the academy right now, and we have 1 in field training. So 3 of the positions that are full are not readily available for patrol. So we're still a little bit short on patrol.
That's interesting. So if I do the math there, we have 14 sergeant officer positions. We're 3 down, so we have 11. And then you have 2 in the academy and 1 sort of, I missed but basically
field training. We have one that's actually in field training.
So
right
we
now
have,
out there.
We have 8.
He's working during the day, but yeah, he's working with another officer. So,
we are down a little bit. Okay.
Yep.
But it's coming back. Tom's
yep,
been doing a great job
back
of recruiting.
And,
yeah.
And you know, I'm always try to be confident and positive as we do our recruiting. That we do have another applicant that is in background. Of course, we never know where those are, you know, going to end up. Yeah. But he's a highly qualified candidate, and he's doing well through the backgrounding process. So we hope to have at least another one of those positions filled in the very near future. I've also got a recruiting and job fair specifically for law enforcement that we're going to be attending at the University of Washington Tacoma campus next week. So myself and one of my staff will be there specifically there recruiting for new and lateral officers. And we're even going to try to recruit for the deputy chief there as well. I don't know that there'll be many there looking for a deputy chief's position, but there'll be a lot of other police agencies there with us. So this is one of the first opportunities we've had since I've been here to actually get out into the community and go where the qualified candidates are, rather than expecting them to come to us, which is a big challenge here in Port Townsend. Is we've got to go to them and right. find them yeah. and really sell our community, because yeah. a lot of people don't even know we're here.
If you are,
I think when you say that, Tom, I think it's so important. I wanted to add, Taylor, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Tom, when he first started, he came to the library staff meeting and he talked about specifically how to attract and retain diverse hires. And just your thoughts around that, I thought were so beautiful, Tom, because you said you cannot expect people from diverse backgrounds to find us. We have to go and look for people and help recruit them to Port Townsend. And that just really resonated with me. What a beautiful philosophy to bring to our team.
That's interesting. I've completely missed the halfway mark. If you're just joining us, if you're just joining us in the last 3 or 4 minutes of Bureaucracy Now, you are listening to Bureaucracy Now on KPTZ. I am co-hosting today with Library Director Melody Sky Weaver. And we are talking to Police Chief Thomas Olson, and questions can be directed, and there are none, to dj@kptz.org. So we have a few more minutes here. Melody, did you want to talk about staffing with respect to the library, or was it most?
Yeah, well, I wanted to add a little bit. We just recently had a library position open, and I think we had about 50 applicants. So we're very wow. fortunate, Tom, when we have at least frontline customer service library jobs open that we get a lot of applicants, primarily within the community. And I wanted to encourage people that when they reach out and they apply to work for the city in general, or specifically the library, how important it is to be persistent, because these jobs are really coveted. And they don't, you know, I've seen people apply a couple of times and we might hire them on the second or third time. So I just wanted to give a boost to anybody who's doing that. But the other thing I wanted to add is that you don't necessarily have to have library experience to work like a library assistant position at the library. But what I really look for, and I think what our leadership team looks for, is people that love people. You have, mm-hmm. and I think it's, you know, once again, it's working to take down the myth of what public libraries were. We're not those quiet places of 100 years ago. We're really the place where everyone knows your name. We're a community center in so many ways. So looking for people that really love working with people from all different walks of life, I think is really important when we're looking for library staff. So thanks for letting me talk about that a little bit for any future applicants.
I suspect Chief Olson has some of the same requirements. You got to like people.
I was just going to add to it. I mean, that's, you know, part of my community policing philosophy is customer service. And yeah. You know, we spend most of our time in a customer service type function with our community, and you've got to love people to do what we do as well, from the community to your coworkers, you know, to the people around you. It's really become more and more about relationships and being able to understand where people are coming from.
I have a quick question for Melody, which is, and then I got one more question I think will probably finish this up. But I just have a curiosity, Melody, where do we stand with respect to the community read? Every year, I know we all look forward to this. And
oh, Taylor, thank you. Yes, we just officially announced the community read yesterday. It's going to be Braiding Sweetgrass, the Young Adult Edition. That's by Robin Wall Kimmerer and adapted by Monique Gray Smith. Monique Gray Smith will be here at the end of March. So every year we declare March as Reading Month. And the community read is all about building community through the shared experience of reading and discussing the same book. So the books will be out next week at the library. They're called read and release copies. Mm-hmm. So people can get them and read them and then pass them out, so they're not checked out. The idea is that hopefully the books
passed from hand to hand is what you want to do.
Yes, that's what I mean. We'll have copies that you can check out too, but this, I think, just encourages more wonderful sharing of the book, and we're so excited. I'm hoping, Taylor, I can come back. I will probably be meeting with Don Morrow on bureaucracy in March.
Good. And you'll be talking more about this. Well, I'm glad the question was apparently timely. If I got it within a day.
And I have
to say that was utter complete luck on my part. It's like, cause I just know that, you know, as spring is in the air, except it's not, we start to think about the community read. So so the book is called Braiding Sweetgrass.
Yes, and that book came out quite a few years ago, and now the newest book is the young adult version, but it will appeal to all ages. And I love being able to talk about reading with you and Tom, because you all are big readers, so this is really fun to bring this into the conversation today.
Which actually brings me to my last question, and I think we only have time for this. You mentioned in passing that you and Chief Olson share a common interest in reading, and that is reading about leadership. Is that can you elaborate a little bit on that, and maybe the two of you would like to share a couple of your favorite books on the subject?
Yes. So when I first met Tom for lunch, I think we talked about leadership books for 2 hours when he first started. And our leadership team through the department heads of the city, including our wonderful city manager, John, we have a leadership book club. So we read a couple of different books together a year. And Tom, you should share. We're reading Tom's one of his favorite books right now, which I think you should share.
Yeah, so I'll just real quickly say that my passion with it came through my master's program. I have a master's in organizational leadership, and so I had to do a lot of reading on it, and you know, really found out that it's more of a philosophy than anything, and things change with groups and people. And so you can always and continue to learn as you read new ideas and things that come out of the military and different ideas. But one of my favorites is one that I had to read through my program was John Maxwell's 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
Oh.
It's a very easy read. The laws are very easy, and there's examples. And when I was in the Guard, one of the things that I did was I put a group together from E1s, E2s, all the way up to captains. And we would come together as a group, 21 of them each session, and each one would be assigned an irrefutable law.
Oh, interesting.
And they would talk about what it was, and then they would bring examples from their life that pertain to it. And what was so neat about it was I had captains learning from E1s and vice versa, and it went over really well. And so I refer to it all the time. If I'm mentoring somebody or somebody just asks me about, you know, what's important, I always refer them to that book. And I've also got a couple of authors that I really like that are a little bit different type of leadership read, but that's one of my favorites.
Okay.
Yeah, we need to come back on and just talk about leadership reads, because the one I would add is Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. It's beautiful incorporating emotional intelligence and vulnerability. And we've read that as a leadership team, too. And I always love to say leaders are readers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we are actually really, really out of time. and I'm glad we took the extra 5 minutes to go on. But if you're a regular listener to Bureaucracy Now, first of all, I want to thank Chief Olson and Library Director Melody Sky Weaver for joining me today on Bureaucracy Now and making a really interesting discussion. This part of Brew Now is where I do a transition into Blues Journey, and I play a blues song. And given that Chief Olson was with us today, I specifically wanted to find something that was illegal. and that, of course, is the Cocaine Blues, which is an interesting song. There, if you look it up, there are apparently several songs named the Cocaine Blues. It was a popular topic. This particular version was kind of popularized by Reverend Gary Davis, who's a old-timey, well-known blues musician. And then he taught it to Ramblin' Jack Elliott, who was a folkster in the 60s, who really learned his licks from Woody Guthrie. And it's that version that got picked up by a man who certainly knows cocaine, and that would be Keith Richards. So we have here, and I think you'll enjoy this. This is Keith Richards doing the Cocaine Blues, like he's got experience. And thank you, you two, for joining me today.
Dressed in white, see baby gonna stay all night.